Back in March, when such things were more readily done than they are now, I went to my local pet store to purchase a fish. I suspected that the coming quarantine would last a while, and if I were going to be secluded at home, I wanted to be secluded with aquatic life. I decided to buy Asbestos splendens, which some of you might better know as the Siamese fighting fish. These fish prefer solitude and are comfortable in small tanks, which meant that one could be fit in our guest bedroom. I chose a gorgeous black orchid male and a small stone lantern for his aquarium. Back at home, I set up his tank and named him Basho. Nowadays, I am glad to report he seems happy as a clam. I named Basho for the famous poet and diarist in 17th century Japan, Matsuo Basho, who not only made the haiku a high art form, but also a kind of sacred scripture. He is best known for the work, a travelogue titled The Narrow Road to the Deep North. I was given a copy of it in my teens by a family friend, and I have kept it with me for all the decades since. The opening lines are legendary in world literature. Days and months are the travelers of eternity. So are the years that pass by. Those who steer a boat across the sea or drive a horse over the earth till they succumb to the weight of years spend every minute of their lives traveling, Basho wrote. I myself have been tempted by a long time for the cloud-moving wind, filled with a strong desire to wander. As strong as his desire to wander was, however, Basho did not do it that often. When he was not out on the road, Basho lived in a tiny hut built for him by students and fans of his poetry. Such was celebrity during the Edo era. Although he had a number of friends he was devoted to, Basho was introverted and introspective. He always had a personal fondness for solitude and spent stretches of his life in almost total seclusion. He had a marked impatience with, and at times vocal disdain for, social niceties. His frank disposition prompted him to banish those whom he feared would waste his time. He preferred to keep company with his own experiences and spent a great deal of time either recollecting his past travels or anticipating his future ones. He may have liked remembering bygone wayfarers more than he enjoyed getting actual visitors. Basho felt most at home on his sojourns. The gods seemed to have possessed my soul and turned it inside out, and the roadside images seemed to invite me from every corner, he confessed, so that it is impossible for me to stay idle at home. Of course, home was generally the safest place for him to be. He suffered from poor health, increasingly so as his age became advanced, and the open road then was dangerous for anyone at any age. Supply lines and sheltering abodes could never be guaranteed, even in the gentlest seasons. The terrain itself was treacherous, irregularly trafficked, and sometimes beset by thieves. In addition, traveling real distances required making careful arrangements and covering unexpected expenses. But Basho considered the trouble and the risk well worth it. On the road, in the open air, at the margins of civilization, surrounded by nature, passing people by, Basho came alive as his senses stirred. The flora and fauna were both beloved traveling companions of his. Basho wrote, "The chestnut by the eaves in magnificent bloom passes unnoticed by men of the world." It was clear that he wanted to be a different kind of person. It was clear, too, that he wanted to inhabit a different kind of world. What kind of persons do we want to be? And what kind of world do we want to inhabit? Throughout this church year, I have been preaching a sermon series on the living tradition of Unitarian Universalism and the six sources it draws from most especially. The last of these six is the spiritual teachings of Earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Of all the spiritual sources we catalog, This final one is the one that remains at too far a remove from most of us these days. Those of us in developed countries struggle mightily to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature and within a sacred circle of life that includes other animals and plant life too. So much of our existence is unnatural. It is engineered for productivity and efficiency and often artificial, meaning we see only the false front of it, not the ugly underbelly. One of the many large-scale celebrations that was canceled in the midst of the coronavirus closures was Earth Day. Earth Day 2020 fell on April 22nd in the midst of a pandemic, so it mattered little that it was the 50th anniversary of its beginning. What made this past Earth Day notable was how our global health crisis proved itself oddly good for the environment. Perhaps you saw those news photos of lions in Africa stretched across the middle of public roadways, lounging comfortably in the sun. While the majority of humanity lives under tremendous stress, this horrible viral outbreak has relieved some of the worst stresses on wildlife and the natural world. Our enforced seclusion has meant that animals can come out of their hiding, spared the regular ravages of us. Our atmosphere has cleared as an unprecedented decline in carbon emissions has been reported around the globe. Stay-at-home orders worldwide, in addition to curling contagion, appear beneficial to the biosphere as a whole. Sadly, the burdens of this pandemic, like all costs, will be distributed unequally. We see this in America, where income inequality has tragic consequences for the disadvantaged who cannot take time away from work. Affluent Americans can afford to stay inside and healthy, others cannot. On a global scale, we see that trend magnified and multiplied. Those in poor countries with developing economies cannot sustain work stoppages and production shutdowns for too long. Besides, there are many places where decent and affordable housing is so scarce and population density so great that social distancing is only aspirational. How can we begin to account for that unfortunate reality? Indian novelist Arundhati Roy framed this stark situation for her readers in the thought-provoking opinion piece she recently published in the Financial Times. In her piece, "The Pandemic is a Portal," Roy contended, "The COVID crisis is still to come. What is this thing that has happened to us? It's a virus, yes. In and of itself, it holds no moral brief, but it is definitely more than a virus," she concluded. Whatever it is, the coronavirus has made the mighty kneel and brought the world to a halt like nothing else could. Our minds are still racing back and forth, longing for a return to normality, trying to stitch our future to our past, and refusing to acknowledge the rupture, she noted. But the rupture exists. We dare not deny that. If globalization depends on an extractive and exploitative economy to succeed, perhaps it needs to fail. This interruption just might be a gift. Roy added that in the midst of this terrible despair, it offers us a chance to rethink the doomsday machine we have built for ourselves. Nothing could be worse than a return to normality. Historically, pandemics have forced humans to break with the past and imagine their world anew. This one is no different, Roy explained. It is a portal, a gateway between one world and the next. We can choose to walk through it, dragging the carcasses of our prejudice, our avarice, our dead rivers and smoky skies behind us. Or we can walk through it lightly, with little luggage, ready to imagine another world. Just imagine that. The poet Basho did. He packed modestly. He repaired his sandals and robe and hat between his sojourns and brought only the bare necessities and scant funds for each trip. He trusted his human instinct for survival and believed in his potential for ingenuity. He made a study of his environs and the creatures who populated them. Watching a pair of osprey nest on a rock inspired this question in the poet. What divine instinct has taught these birds no waves swell so high as to swamp their homes? Well-versed as he was in the literature of his time, Basho was also religiously informed by insights from Zen Buddhism, by the Shintoism native to Japan, and by the Taoist tradition that taught him to take life lessons from nature. Those who would take over the earth and shape it to their will never, I notice, succeed. The earth is like a vessel so sacred that at the mere approach of the profane it is marred, and when they reach out their fingers it is gone, the great sage Lao Tse declared. For a time in the world some push aboard and others are tipped out. At no time in the world will one who is sane overreach, overspend, overrate. For too long we moderns have jeopardized both our sanity and our planet. We have overreached our habitations and overspent our resources and overrated our own needs. Now we need to think of our collective mental health in addition to our collective medical health. This pandemic prescribes stillness. How do you fill yours? During these days of extended closures, when we all remain such solitary creatures, we can give serious consideration to how we want to live when we reemerge from quarantine. We can use this period of suspended animation to expand our own consciousness. Even a severely constrained life holds both richness and depth. Wisely spent, it can allow us to tap our inner resources and develop our reflective capacities and become more intimate with our own existence. Like Basho, we can mind the time more and mind it less as travelers of eternity. We can become sincere pilgrims through these difficult days, weeks, months. We can become intentional about planning how we want to move through this world when we step back out into it again. Will we find a pace in harmony with the rhythms of nature, or tear through it at the breakneck pace all too familiar to us? We see now that our breakneck pace can be deadly in so many ways. After travel bans lift, we may still want to limit our intercontinental and cross-continental travel, nevertheless. After food production resumes full force, we may want to limit or eliminate our meat consumption. We may want to stay off the interstate and work from home a few days each week. If our entire economy needs to be rebuilt, perhaps a Green New Deal is the thing to do that and to pave the way to a more sustainable future. It's not too late for us to locate ourselves within the sacred circle of life, as so many spiritual teachings throughout the ages have encouraged us to do. So maybe our Earth Day was not canceled this year after all. Maybe it was extended instead. Recently, a dear friend of mine, a retired Unitarian Universalist minister and the child of foreign missionaries, mailed me a Happy Crisis card. It contained the now famous Chinese ideogram that depicts crisis as a combination of danger and opportunity. My hope is that we take the opportunities of this time just as seriously as we take its dangers. Between alarmism and fatalism might lie our preferred option, enlightened opportunism. We can pass through that portal that pandemic opened, thoroughly transformed, if we consciously choose new life. When I bought my fish, the clerk at my local pet store told me that a lot of people were shopping there then and bringing home creature companions for the quarantine. Apparently, animal shelters around the country have seen an uptick in adoptions. We humans are hardwired for biophilia, for love of all life forms, and under duress, perhaps we feel it most strongly. I have become very fond of Basho the fish since March. And in a bizarre instance of life imitating art, I sometimes read him haikus written by his namesake, Basho the poet. He seems to like the poetry. He stops swimming, I swear, and listens, his long fins fluttering in the water. It's a beautiful sight to behold. Basho the fish, like Basho the poet, is showing me how to inhabit life more fully than I knew possible. So I am taking note of that now.